This is the Pacifica National Board Audit Committee meeting of April 18th, 2011, 6:36 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Pacific Daylight Time, 9:36 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And I guess we'll go ahead and call the roll. That seems fine. Wesley, are you're still not by computer, right? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call the roll here. Let me pull that up again.
Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. Okay, just 1 second, please. And there we go. Okay, so let's see. God bless whoever that is sneezing.
That's Renee. Thank you.
Thank you, Renee. Okay. All right. Wesley Bethune.
Here.
Anthony, I'm sorry, say your last name, please.
Fest.
Fest, okay. You're present. Robert Mark.
Present.
Renee Bryce Laporte.
Present.
Carolyn Burden has an excused absence. Fred Blair.
Present.
Fred Condor.
Present.
J.D. Brinkley, I believe, is not on the call. Margie Wilkinson. I'm sorry, Margie?
Margie?
Margie.
Hear me. I'm here.
Hi, thank you. Again, there's a name I can't make out from this, so I'll just go ahead. Nancy Saibara Notomi?
Oh, present.
Present, okay. And is there anyone on the call I have not called? Okay, and my name's Summer Reese. Okay, all right. We've already had a little executive session. We're now in open session. The minutes, I believe, were taken by Ms. Burden, who's not on the call this evening. So if there's no objection, we'll postpone the minutes from the last meeting until the next meeting for approval. We need to go ahead and elect officers and, well, first approve an agenda, which should include the election of officers and a discussion of the role of the audit committee. Is there any amendments or additions to that proposed agenda? Okay, hearing none. Could we get any volunteers for chair of this committee? We need to have a chair and a secretary. Anybody want to? Anybody want to volunteer to be the chair here? Any nominations for chair?
Fred Clunder.
Fred Clunder. Okay, and who's nominating him?
Wesley Bethune, KPMT.
Hi, Wesley. Okay, thank you. Fred, would you like to accept that nomination?
You know, I'd consider it. It depends somewhat where the group wants to go.
Sure. And, you know, and I'm not, I'm thinking, I don't believe there's a requirement that it be a director who's the, I suppose I should know that. Does it have to be a director from the PNB to be a chair of this committee? I don't think so. Fred, would you like to elaborate a little in terms of the direction the group wants to go and what your thoughts are?
Yeah, I guess my approach would be we want to strengthen financial controls, and we want to on the one hand, on the accounting side, on the record keeping side, if you will. We need to make sure that our accounting system is tight. For me, that's a simple way of saying financial controls. On the other hand, there's management accounting in addition to financial accounting, and that's a matter of plotting how we're doing with financial management ratios. I think if we take that as our task, we can perhaps get to work. If we don't, we're going to be wandering, wandering pretty broadly and not get something done. So, I think it would be useful to see where people want to take this group, because I certainly don't want to be a majority of one.
Thank you, Fred. Are there any other nominations for chair of the board? Any volunteers?
I wonder whether I guess my suggestion would be let's limp by without a permanent chair until we've had the opportunity to discuss what it is that we want to do in the course of this meeting, perhaps.
Okay. All right.
Application for Fred Blair's nomination.
Are you nominating me for chair?
I wasn't, but if you would accept it, I would be happy to do so. I think we need to decide what it is that we want to do, and at that point, I would want that sense. And if you're willing to proceed without it, by all means, I'll be happy to nominate you. I'm nominating you.
You've been nominated, Fred Blair.
I'm a little shaky on being a chair, but...
I think it's a well-defined it's a matter of reading the financial reports and reading audit reports and getting on with the work of pushing things in some of the directions that Summer and others are talking about. So I'd be happy to lend you my support under any circumstances, Mr. Blair.
This is Margie Wilkinson. I'd like to be on the list, please.
Hi, Margie. Fred and then Margie. Fred, did you want to respond to your nomination?
Well, my view of a chair is basically somebody who's just controlling the flow of the conversation during
mm-hmm.
the meeting. And I don't have any grand overall view of where we should be going.
But you'd be willing to be that person who helps to keep the flow going?
Well, I guess I got to jump in and do it at some point for some committee to get some training. I just pity the poor people who have to put up with me.
Oh, please, we're all tolerant. Okay, so you might be willing to accept this.
I might try it as an interim chair for a while and see how it goes.
Okay. Okay. Margie?
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any disagreement with the first Fred's. I'm not quite sure what your last name is.
Clunder.
Tender.
Clunder. Klunder.
Anything you want to call me. Clunder is it, yeah.
I certainly agree with I wasn't actually on an audit committee, but I was on another board for a nonprofit, and we called ourselves something else, but it seems to me we fulfilled the functions of an audit committee. And, you know, with strengthening financial controls and making sure that the accounting systems work and then keeping track of, you know, making sure that people pay attention to where we are and where we're going or we're not going. But it also seemed to me from the letter that Summer read and from my previous experience that another function of the audit committee is general business practices, is making sure that we're using the best possible business practices. In the letter that Summer read, it was a little hard for me to follow, but I noticed, you know, it talked about things like pledge cards with people's credit card numbers on them not being destroyed. And I know I've worked in the pledge room a lot at KPFA, and I know they're extremely diligent about that. So it worries me to hear that there are other stations where that doesn't happen. An issue that we've been dealing with in Berkeley of the confidentiality of the email addresses of our subscribers. I'm just saying that there are other kinds of business practices. I don't believe, for example, that anyone on our LSV has been asked to sign a confidentiality agreement, and that it's not been brought up by any of the PMB members on our board, nor has it been brought up by management or anyone else, you know. So I'm certainly in favor of that, and we'll see to it. I'm the chair of the board, and I'll see to it that it's done right away. But I don't mean to belabor the point. It's just that there are business practices that go along with the financial issues that need to be considered as well. And I'm wondering if that is what people are thinking about as well.
Thank you, Margie. Part of internal controls are frequently also standard business practices. So certainly when those things are highlighted, you're usually deviating from things which would be considered standard business practice. It sounds like I have two maybes for for chair, right? But neither of you are ready to jump right in this second. Do you want me to continue pro-teming for this evening and go over what the roles of the audit committee are from a more just sort of standard practice point of view, and then maybe at the next meeting one of you will decide that you want to go ahead and be the chair? Do you want to... we've got the two Freds. You're the gentleman in contention this evening. Do one of you want to jump in tonight and do pro tem, or commit to being the pro tem for the next meeting?
Fred B. here. I'm willing to let you continue for the rest of this meeting.
Okay. And would you like to give Fred Klunder? Yes.
I'll agree with that most definitely. And I simply want to be of service, but I have some, I guess, some specific ideas of what that is.
Okay.
And have been on too many committees where we didn't focus. So I'll just, if I could just say, I've done my campaign speech, and I'll be on the phone call next time.
Okay, and then maybe at that meeting, one or the other of you would go ahead and be kind enough to go ahead and plunge in and maybe take the reins as at least chair pro tem and try it for a while, if that would be acceptable. Does that sound like a working plan?
It's acceptable to me.
Okay, and also, okay, both Freds concur with that? Okay, and we didn't have nobody else volunteered for this or got nominated, right?
Okay. Robert, I have a query before we move on.
Robert Mark, go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is for Fred Klunder. Would you just explain what you mean with regard to these ratios you're talking about? Because I don't want to give you the misimpression that I'm all for that when I really don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. I guess maybe one of the most common ratios is the ratio of the current ratio, which looks at the relation of current assets to current liabilities, where current assets and liabilities are things that can realize or can eventuate within, say, 90 days. So if you look at, Summer sent us those two documents, one under the title Management Letter, and it was related to, but the other was the report itself. And if you go in there and look at note number 20, as well as, I think, the second to the last sentence in the cover letter, it talks about working capital and the persistent erosion of working capital. Working capital is precisely that difference between your current assets and your current liabilities, and a ratio, depending on your industry and a lot of other things, would be something like you should always have twice the current assets to cover your current liabilities. And if you see a movement in that, you've got a problem if it's a negative movement, and a positive if it isn't. And that ratio of, say, double, you know, whether we say double or triple or 1.5 times or whatever, the point is that your, you know, current assets should be able to cover current liabilities, so that you don't need to go, you know, to, GE and ask for a loan or sell, you know, sell the Berkeley building. So that's one ratio, and there are many others. So it's taking those financial reports, which when I was on the National Finance Committee, Lavarne generally did provide to us, and track them from the perspective of management ratios. If we look at those numbers over the last 3 years, you see that erosion that is intolerable. And I nowhere have seen, not that I've looked a great deal, any objective enunciated by Lavarne and by Arlene more recently to move us in a positive direction. Lavarne showed up to the KPFK board a week or two ago and talked about some objectives for ratios a year out. Nothing for ratios next year. Instead, she focused largely on income as opposed to expenditure said, well, our income is a little bit more than our expenditure. Our income is a little bit less than our expenditure. And that's not the only, nor I would argue, is it the principal indicator of the health of an organization. So I think if we look at any any just general accounting book and look under ratios or management accounting, there's a fair degree of unanimity as to what that is. It's a little bit different from a nonprofit. You've got some unique things like the extent to which you trust the pledges of your folks. But I don't think anybody is really keeping an eye on that from the perspective of the year-over-year objectives and movements. And the audit report calls attention to it, and I'm suggesting that that, plus the controls, are things we should attend to. You can survive with lousy controls. When your ratios erode, you get to a point where you got to sell a building. Or sell a tower, or sell a a license with the FCC, and we're not too far away from on paper what looks like that problem. Thank you. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Fred. Okay, thank you. Bob, did you have any further question on that? Okay. I guess I would like to go ahead and, if it's all right with the group, go through some of what, like, an audit committee's role is. Is that acceptable to everyone? Is there any objection to that in terms of moving? Well, actually, we were still on elections of chairs. Does anyone want to play secretary for tonight? Is there anyone willing to be secretary pro tem? Carolyn did it last time. Is there anyone who'd be willing to take notes? I mean, we're recording the call, but every meeting has to have somebody to at least take notes for that meeting, even if it rotates on a pro tem basis. Is there anyone who would be willing to be a note taker for this evening? Any takers at all?
Summer, I'd do it, but how long is the meeting going to go?
Well, you know, we spent a good deal of time there in executive session. I'd like to kind of hit the highlights. A lot of what I sent everyone, I guess I would like to ask people to go ahead and do homework and read the stuff that I sent, because some of it's very well prepared from accounting firms, and it really goes in-depth as to what the role of an audit committee is, and I think that would be helpful for the education of the committee members so that we've got a better direction going forward for the next meeting. But maybe, I don't know, probably another half hour or so.
Okay. I wouldn't mind doing it at the next meeting. I'm wondering whether it wouldn't be easier for, is it Carolyn who has done it thus far, just to continue?
But she's not on the call tonight. You mean to take it from the notes? That's
whoever
always a possibility.
Was up to this point, who was that, please?
Carolyn Burden from New York, but she's out sick, so she's not on the call tonight.
Well, if people would identify themselves, I'll try to take notes here.
Okay, thank you, Fred. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you, Fred.
Okay. So, okay, I'm hearing red wine in the background. It sounds fantastic, but
somebody mute your phone, please.
We'd enjoy the music, but we need to hear. Okay, is there any objection to my going over some of the highlights of what an audit committee does at this point so that we can
No, a point of information, though, Summer, and it was not me, but I do want to, maybe you could share for folks the mute.
Oh, sure. #1. Thank you, Renee. Yes, if your phone doesn't have, like, a mute button, then you can hit #1, and that will mute the teleconference system for your line, and then you can, I believe.
And how do you get back on after
I think
that?
You do the same thing. I think it's #1.
#1 again, exactly.
Yeah, and that gets you right back off again, okay? So, yes.
Sure. Fred, could I just say something quickly? I wonder whether, in as much as you sent out, a number of pretty hefty documents, don't you want us to read those first? Before it is, I would guess that you're forced either to summarize them or to whet our appetite for them. But what's the objective right now?
I was just going to hit really the highlights. The heavy documents go into a greater level of depth as to what an audit committee does, but what an audit committee does is actually really pretty straightforward in a lot of levels in terms of the basics. So I would like to probably just go ahead and hit some of those things if that's all right with everybody. But yes, the documents go into greater depth, and I think it would be probably helpful for people if they could read them, and then they might have more questions when they come back or a better idea of, you know, the scope of their activities. So, because I don't think it's possible for people to read them while on the call, you know, that's not really fair to people. But I could at least hit the major points, and then and everyone can read, do their homework, and then when we come back, you know, I think everyone will be better versed in what we're doing.
Good.
Does that sound okay?
Sounds good here.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So, okay, so I'm taking this actually from the last thing I sent you, which is written by a CPA. And it's pretty much exactly what it says on the California Attorney General website, which is subject to the supervision of and approval of the Board of Directors. The Audit Committee shall, 1, recommend the retention and termination of the independent auditor and may negotiate the independent auditor's compensation. 2, review the independent auditor's independence and the performance of non-audit services, if any, proposed to be performed by the independent auditor in accord with applicable auditor independence standards. 3, meet with the independent auditor for the purpose of overseeing and oversee the planning and performance of the annual audit. 4, review the performance of the annual audit with the independent auditor and discuss with the independent auditor the findings during the audit and the independent auditor's proposed audit opinion. 5, report and provide recommendations to the board regarding the performance of the annual audit and audit opinion proposed to be issued by the independent auditor. And 6, as reasonably practicable under the circumstances and as authorized by the board, throughout the year, review and address significant accounting and audit matters or issues, if any, that come to the audit committee's attention and report to the board when appropriate.
Summer, and what was that document called, please?
Let's see. That would be, it says untitled. Isn't that helpful of me? No, it's the last one I sent everyone. It's HTTP, blah, 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 davidtate.us files, the little paper about nonprofit audit committees. So it's written by a CPA. It covers several different things. I particularly also liked the NFP audit handbook, which I thought was pretty good looking also. I mean, actually, all of these have some really valuable information, and that one goes into internal auditing versus external auditing. Everything I just quoted from is dealing with external independent auditors, our requirements under the law to have a independent audit. So we've got the Grant Thornton Not-for-Profit Audit Committee Handbook that I've sent everyone. And another one for these are some like really large accounting firms in terms of just like this is how it's done. But I mean, our role in large measure is to see to it that A, the independent auditor is truly independent, and that's why it covers things. You know, if your auditor gets hired by your organization to do things besides the independent audit, he or she might become compromised by having other employment outside the scope of the independent audit, so you need to make sure that that person is truly independent. That's why the audit committee is supposed to recommend who to hire so that it's not coming from staff. To see to it, you know, we had a very expensive audit the year before last, and part of that goes back to, like, our internal controls. The messier the organization is, the more expensive it is to do your independent audit because the auditor has to go through a lot more field work to track down the data to verify the accounting information. So the more you improve your internal processes, the easier it is to have your audit performed and the less it costs the organization. So things like that are also within the purview of what we're doing and those type of things. I think I will go ahead and see if I can get our auditor maybe to, if it's possible, be on the line with us for the next call for even like, you know, maybe half an hour might be helpful for everyone. So these different handbooks that I've sent you cover, you know, what is the scope of working with an independent auditor and what we're supposed to be doing in terms of oversight. So, questions? Just keep reading?
Reading.
Okay. Well, here we go. Guiding principles. This is from the Grant Thornton handbook. Again, this is like really mainstream, but that's okay. I mean, it's real stuff. The guiding principles of the audit committee can be summed up in two words, accountability and independence. A not-for-profit organization is accountable to stakeholders such as donors, grantors, organizations that provide financing, and people who use the resources of the organization. Those stakeholders rely on the organization to protect its reputation and use the monies it receives, whether fees, donations, grants, or exchange contracts, properly and prudently. In addition to being accountable to its stakeholders, the organization has a much broader responsibility to society at large because of its tax-exempt status. Tax exemption is a way to recognize the societal value of the services the organization performs. It is also a method by which all taxpayers underwrite those services. In effect, every taxpayer is a stakeholder in your organization. In order to govern effectively, the board must verify that management has adopted financial practices consistent with the highest standards. The audit committee's primary role is to instill confidence that the organization's financial and tax status, internal controls, and compliance procedures allow it to fulfill its mission and achieve long-term viability. Accountability and independence. Independence. The audit committee is charged with ensuring that management is conducting business on an arm's-length basis with all parties and avoiding conflicts of interest and inside dealings. To carry out this charge effectively, the audit committee itself must be independent of both management and the external auditors. The audit committee concerns itself with three facets of independence. The organization's internal auditors must be independent from management and must be able to report problems and findings openly to the audit committee. Two, the external auditor's opinion on the financial statements must be based only on its independent professional judgment without improper influence from management. And three, the organization's board members and management must be independent from vendors. If overlapping financial interests or personal relationships exist, they must be fully disclosed, and the appropriate personnel must recuse themselves from discussions and voting on related matters. Basic roles and responsibilities. The audit committee's roles in the organization's governance. The audit committee of a not-for-profit organization has three main roles. First, the audit committee represents the board in overseeing the establishment and implementation of accounting policies and internal controls that promote good financial stewardship. To understand whether the organization is exercising proper stewardship over its assets, the audit committee must understand the organization's financial management practices. Part of this understanding comes from monitoring the findings of the internal and external auditors, who in turn monitor and test the organization's internal controls and risk management procedures. All of this activity is ultimately meant to safeguard the organization's assets, promote the reliability and accuracy of its financial reporting, and mitigate the risk of fraud. Logistically speaking, audit committee members should meet with the organization's external auditors at least twice a year, once to discuss the work plan and once to review the audit findings before they are presented to the board. In most cases, however, audit committee members' duties in this respect are more involved. Second, the audit committee is the initial board committee to inquire into how the business risks of the organization are being planned for and managed. Other board committees, such as the investment committee, the HR personnel committee, the program committee — program in this context means the mission of the organization, not, you know, our program actually is programming, but and the development committee — will have a role in overseeing specific areas of risk. However, it is the audit committee that asks the overreaching questions that help determine whether planning for those risks is adequate. To do this, the audit committee should understand the overall risk management profile of the organization, including its investment practices, its adherence to tax regulations, its disaster recovery plans, its compliance with donor and grantor requirements, its state charitable registration and unclaimed property reporting, and the adequacy of its insurance coverage. Third, the audit committee plays a pivotal role in overseeing the organization's compliance function. Every not-for-profit organization must comply with regulatory standards that dictate financial, billing, spending, and investing practices. In addition, most not-for-profit organizations must adhere to regulations specifying how they carry out their programs and what types of matters must be reported to regulators. An effective audit committee must have a basic understanding of the regulatory standards that affect the organization and how the organization adheres to those standards. The audit committee also needs to know which regulatory matters are assessed by the internal and external auditors and which regulatory matters fall outside, outside the scope of financial management and are instead managed by program staff. In most instances, it is the audit committee that inquires into the role of the organization's compliance officer and ascertains that both the program committee and the board are kept informed of pertinent issues. The duties of audit committee members will vary from organization to organization depending on the group's size and the nature of its activities. The tasks most commonly assigned to an audit committee include the following. External audit. Recommending and appointing an independent audit firm. 2. Confirming the propriety of financial statement presentation and the adequacy of footnote disclosures. 3. Facilitating clear and appropriate communication of financial information. 4. Reviewing the scope of and work plan for the independent audit. 5. Receiving and acting upon the results of the external audit. 6. Reporting the results of the external audit to the board. 7. Reviewing and approving the contract for any non-audit services provided by the external auditors. 6. Resolving disagreements between the external auditors and management. Business risk assessment and mitigation. Overseeing a comprehensive assessment of the business and reputational risks faced by the organization and assessing the internal controls over those risks. 2. Holding management, including the CEO, responsible for an effective internal control structure. 3. Providing open access to the audit committee by the internal auditor and the external auditor to discuss issues, concerns, and scope of work. 4. Approving the annual internal audit plan and reviewing the reports prepared by the internal auditors. We do not have internal auditors, just for the record. 5. Confirming that employees have a confidential way to report concerns regarding fraud, financial impropriety, and misuse of funds. Compliance. 1. Verifying the organization's compliance with external laws and regulations and internal policies and procedures. 2. Reviewing the Form 990 that is filed with the IRS. Just to note, I did request that from the office. I've been told that it has not been filed yet. That's why we don't have a copy. So that's in one of the emails that I sent to everyone. 3. Making certain that conflict of interest and code of ethics policies are implemented and applicable to employees and the board. 4. Confirming the existence of whistleblowing procedures through which stakeholders, including employees, can raise concerns without fear of retaliation. And what is that? 6. 5 or 6. There we go. 5, sorry. Ascertaining that a record retention policy is in place. Some smaller organizations incorporate audit committee functions into their finance committees. The trend, however, is toward the establishment of a separate standing audit committee. And we wouldn't qualify as a small organization by that definition. Indeed, some states require that not-for-profit organizations establish one, which is the case for us. The role of an audit committee is quite different from that of a finance committee. A finance committee's principal task is the approval and monitoring of the budget. Performing this function requires individuals who understand the organization's programmatic structure and mission. An audit committee, however, is likely to view the organization more critically, seeking to understand the fundamental principles of accountability, financial reporting, and internal controls. To further this understanding, a board-approved charter should spell out the audit committee's exact responsibilities. I don't know that we actually, I will double-check the bylaws to see what we have to say about that. The composition of the audit committee. The audit committee is generally composed of 3 to 5 members, the majority of whom should be board members. Audit committee members who are not on the board can serve effectively and in many instances can serve as accounting experts. All audit committee members should be independent of the organization's management. That is, they must not accept directly or indirectly any salary or compensatory fees from the organization. Ideal characteristics of audit committee members include a solid grounding in business and finance, a good understanding of internal control concepts, financial literacy, i.e., an understanding of basic financial terminology and the ability to read and interpret financial statements, knowledge of business risk, and an understanding of compliance issues unique to the organization. One or more members should be a financial expert possessing professional knowledge of financial reporting, including GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles, is what that stands for, and internal controls over financial reporting. Ideally, the financial expert should have specific knowledge of accounting procedures used by not-for-profit organizations. Of course, the supply of individuals with such backgrounds will vary considerably from one organization to the next. If your organization does not have board members with a financial background, you should actively recruit bankers, accountants, and other financial professionals to fill this need. As a general rule, the board treasurer should not serve on the audit committee. The audit committee monitors the organization's financial results, thus creating a conflict with the role of the treasurer. Sometimes there is an overlap between members serving on the audit, finance, and investment committees. If such an overlap occurs, it is important that for the majority of audit committee members, there is no overlap. It is very important for audit committee members to have a healthy skepticism regarding what they are told and about how the organization operates. The audit committee should ask management hard questions about practices and policies and pursue issues until it is satisfied with the answers it receives. Individuals who are uncomfortable asking difficult questions or coming to critical conclusions can't serve effectively on an audit committee. The final characteristic an audit committee member must possess is a willing to commit the time and effort necessary to do the job. Depending on your organization's size and structure, this time commitment could be substantial. And let's see. Member liability. Board members of not-for-profit organizations face potential personal legal liabilities. The question of whether serving on an audit committee entails any further legal risk is a legitimate one. Since many of the events that could result in liability for the board stem from failures in internal controls, the audit committee is partly responsible for protecting itself and the board from such liability. Before accepting any board position, investigate whether the organization carries adequate directors and officers, D&O insurance coverage, which protects boards against allegations of wrongdoing. When reviewing the D&O policy, be sure it covers legal costs, which will be incurred regardless of the outcome of a lawsuit. You may wish to consult with legal counsel regarding relevant laws in your state. You may also want to ask your insurance agent about individual policies that might cover such exposure. There's someone that's hitting their phone key over and over and over again, so, and it's very difficult to hear. Let's see, what else? Do we have questions at that point? Because I've just covered a whole bunch of goodies there. And I don't think I covered the current environment, which is right at the beginning, and I apologize. Accountability and independence, the guiding principles of the audit committee. I'll just go ahead and read that first section because it's very short. The current environment. Not-for-profit organizations are under scrutiny as never before. At the federal level, I do wish whoever is hitting a phone key would please cease and desist. Thank you. At the federal level, the IRS has demonstrated a strong interest in good governance practices and in compliance with tax laws and regulations. The Government Accountability Office has issued several reports concerning the financial practices of not-for-profit organizations, and the Senate Finance Committee has addressed governance practices for many years. If your organization receives federal financial support, its granting agencies are also subject to a higher level of accountability. That would be like the CPB. At the state level, attorneys general, through their responsibility to oversee charitable organizations, are concentrating their energy on enforcing compliance with regulations. At the federal and state levels, the tax-exempt status of your organization is seen as a form of government subsidy contingent on ethical behavior. News organizations will report any real or perceived transgression by an organization, its trustees, or its staff. Banks, bond insurers, state debt intermediaries, and ratings agencies have all raised their standards of transparency and financial health. Boards do not want any distraction from the achievement of their organization's mission. Therefore, they too are setting higher standards for governance and financial practices. The responsibility for meeting the heightened expectations of today's increasingly stringent climate falls directly on the audit committee of your organization. So obviously, that covers a lot of ground of what we're responsible for in terms of, oversight with all the different aspects of our business here. So are there any questions at this point? Would you prefer that I continue to?
This is Margie. I have a question. I'm afraid if I let you keep reading, I might forget it.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
I just want to know, is this audit committee new or has there been has the PMB had an audit committee for some time?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. It's always had an audit committee.
Okay. And are the minutes of those meetings available somewhere? So I was just thinking that if the audit committee has existed in the past, it would help me get oriented if I could look at some minutes of previous meetings.
I agree with you. The former chair of the audit committee called me while I was on the call with all of you on my... So I will... one of our problems as an organization that I would like to see us fix this year is the easy access of previous meetings, from minutes of meetings and things of that nature. I will inquire after that, find out where they're located at, and either get them distributed to the audit committee prior to the next meeting, or if they're posted, where that location is, okay? Because I can't say I have it at the tip of my fingertips, but I have every reason to presume that there are minutes from previous meetings then that we should be able to access those, okay? So I will take that as an agenda item to find those for us, all right?
Thank you very much.
Of course. Do people wish that I continue to read a bit more, or would we like to stop here and discuss? I'm happy to continue because I think this is helpful to us, you know, but... Okay. Hearing no objection. So this is our primer. This is our class on what we're doing here, okay? And then and I also have some other suggestions in terms of things that we should probably take up that go in with our compliance issues. But so I'll go ahead and read a bit more here, and feel free anyone to jump in if you would like me to stop and discuss, or simply stop at that point. The next section is users of the financial statements. So I think I covered all the liability issues. Okay. And just for everyone's knowledge, we do have directors and officers insurance. I will inquire as to its coverage of committee members who are not also on the board of directors, because I can't say that I recall at the tip of my mind what that is, but I will inquire for us, okay? Users of the financial statements. A not-for-profit organization is unique in the breadth and diversity of the constituencies that have a strong interest in its financial health. All of those constituencies are potential users of the organization's financial statements. I actually will stop here and say something. Our national website, the Pacifica.org website, is woefully out of date, usually, in terms of the posting of financial data, as in the certified audit and the 990 tax return. And I'm consulting with some additional computer support help. It's something I want to see us take care of this year, because it is something that does not make our financial documents easily accessible to the public and makes us look bad, quite frankly, in terms of organizations that look at nonprofits to see how compliant they are. And one of the things they look at is to see how easy is it for a member of the public to look at your financial documents. So that's one of the things that we can easily fix, quite frankly, which is simply to make sure that current financial data is consistently posted up on the national website. So that's whether it's, you know, as chair of the board or a member of the audit committee, I want to see to it that that's something that we get resolved fairly shortly, because those things should be easily accessible to any member of the public who wants to look at them, not to mention members of the board who may want to look at them, you know. So internal users. The board uses the financial statements to understand the organization's revenues and expenditures, along with the scope and limitations of its financial assets. For the board, the financial statements are one of many tools used to evaluate the organization's risk profile. Further, the board uses the external auditor's management letter to assess the effectiveness of the organization's internal controls over financial reporting. Management uses the financial statements for the same purposes that the board does. In addition, it uses the management letter as a roadmap for improving the organization's internal controls over financial reporting. Please remember to mute your phones, everyone. #1. Both the board and management should use the financial statements to benchmark similar not-for-profit entities. Since GAAP, again, that's generally accepted accounting principles, so that's a term you'll come across a lot, GAAP principles, okay, GAAP. Since GAAP creates consistency across organizations, these internal users can obtain the financial statements of peers to compare assets, revenue sources, and expenditure patterns. Other internal stakeholders can include faculty and students with an institution of higher education, as well as staff and volunteers at other not-for-profit organizations. External users. Donors and granting agencies use the financial statements to assess an organization's assets and the effectiveness of its internal controls over financial reporting. A clean opinion is seen as validating the financial condition of the organization. Banks and ratings agencies use the financial statements to evaluate the financial strength and viability of the organization when it applies for a loan. Accrediting and licensing agencies use the financial statements to determine the soundness of an organization as a service provider. News organizations use the financial statements, along with Form 990s and other filings, to seek background information on the organization, usually when following up on an embarrassing disclosure. Given the wide range of potential users and uses of an organization's financial statements, it is essential that audit committee members evaluate them carefully and critically. The insider's perspective, working within a not-for-profit organization. An effective audit committee must work with a variety of groups within an organization, the board, the management team, and the internal audit department. Again, I stress, we do not have an internal audit department. It is essential that prospective audit committee members understand their role in each of these relationships, the audit committee and the board. The audit committee represents the board in fulfilling some of its responsibilities for risk management and financial oversight of the organization. Although a share of the audit committee may consist of board members, not all audit committee members need serve on the board. If the necessary expertise isn't available, and if the board wants an independent voice to participate in the audit committee's deliberations, someone other than a board member may be appropriate. The audit committee should report to the board at least twice a year regarding, one, the results of external and internal audits and any audit-related issues that merit the board's attention, two, issues of business risk and financial accountability, three, internal control or procedural issues, four, new systems and controls evaluated and put in place, and five, regulatory issues. The audit committee and management. Management is responsible for creating and maintaining internal controls, and the audit committee is responsible for seeing that those controls are implemented adequately. While the audit committee works collaboratively with the external auditors, the internal auditors, and management, the audit committee is independent of each of these groups and must come to its own conclusions. The external auditors will consider the organization's internal controls as part of their audit process. Their findings should include a list of control issues that they believe need addressing, along with suggestions for addressing them. If your organization has internal auditors, they too will test and report on internal control issues. The audit committee should discuss internal control issues with management and review management's plans for correcting them. In some cases, management may recommend against implementing an auditor's suggestions on a cost-benefit basis, or even recommend an alternative solution. The audit committee should consider these suggestions, discuss them with the auditors if necessary, and bring any unresolved material disputes to the board's attention. The audit committee can also provide management with a valuable, objective sounding board for any issues dealing with internal controls or the public trust. By giving management an opportunity to discuss sensitive matters up front, the audit committee can help fend off potential problems before they arise. The audit committee and the internal audit department. And it was a recommendation of the last external auditor that an internal auditor be hired. So, the audit committee and the internal audit department. Today, audit committees expect more from their internal audit functions than they did in the past. If your not-for-profit organization has an internal audit function, the audit committee should work with it in much the same way that it works with the external auditors. The internal audit department should be accountable to the audit committee. The internal audit director should have confidential access to the audit committee chair. Additionally, the audit committee should evaluate the performance of the internal audit director. The audit committee should review and approve the internal audit work plan. This work plan should be based on a thorough risk analysis and should list the areas within the organization targeted for detailed examination. The audit committee should review the internal audit department's findings and discuss any internal control issues that have arisen. Audit committees are also looking to internal auditors to monitor the status of findings and recommendations in order to verify that appropriate corrective action plans are being implemented. The organization should require the internal audit department to issue periodic reports regarding the status of corrective action plans, present these reports to the audit committee, and possibly re-audit the affected internal controls after a certain period of time has elapsed. Working with the external auditors. As an audit committee member, you will spend much of your time working with the organization's external auditors, who have been appointed by the audit committee or the board itself to assist in assessing the organization's financial condition and financial oversight. The pre-audit meeting. Prior to the audit committee should meet with the external auditors to review their work plan. An auditor's work plan spells out its strategy for conducting the audit. The work plan identifies those areas that the auditor has targeted for the closest scrutiny, indicates staffing levels, and sets a schedule for the audit. Audit committee members should review the work plan with the external auditors in light of the audit committee's own concerns regarding business risks, internal controls, and other pertinent issues. If the audit committee has concerns about a specific financial area, the external auditor's work plan should include it. If the work plan does not include that area, the audit committee must decide whether to add it or substitute it for another. The audit committee must then determine the cost of any additional work it requests and whether the organization can help control the cost of the audit. The pre-audit meeting is also the venue for the external auditors to solicit input from the audit committee on areas of financial statement and internal control risk, including the risk of fraud. The audit committee should discuss with the external auditors any internal control issues or other issues raised by the prior year's audit. The audit committee should inform the external auditors of the steps, if any, that management has taken to resolve those issues and should seek the external auditor's opinion of those solutions. During the pre-audit period, the audit committee should meet in separate executive sessions with the external auditors, the internal auditors, and management. These executive sessions should be a standard part of the pre-audit meeting. If an executive session deals with situations involving compliance or whistleblowing, the audit committee may want to have its own legal counsel present. And I stress that we do not have legal counsel. It's separate from management's legal counsel, so that's an interesting thing. The post-audit meeting. As its name implies, the post-audit meeting is held after the external auditors have completed their fieldwork. At this meeting, the external auditors will present their audit results, including draft reports, supplemental financial information, and related audit reports, to the audit committee for review and discussion. In addition, the external auditors' professional standards require that they communicate the following matters to the audit committee. The auditor's responsibility under GAAP. The external auditors must communicate their level of responsibility for reviewing and reporting on the organization's internal control structure and determining whether the financial statements are free of material misstatement. The external auditors must explain to the audit committee that an audit is designed to deliver reasonable, not absolute, assurance that the financial statements are presented fairly and in accordance with GAAP. Significant accounting policies. The external auditors should inform the audit committee that the selection of or changes in or application of significant accounting principles and financial reporting practices and policies during the period being audited. Discussions should include the effects of these practices and policies and any likely changes to them in controversial or emerging areas. Management judgments and accounting estimates. Accounting estimates are an integral part of an organization's financial statements. These estimates can be particularly sensitive because of the possibility that future amounts may differ significantly from them. The external auditors should educate the audit committee about the process that management employed to formulate sensitive accounting estimates and about the basis for the auditor's conclusions regarding the reasonableness of those estimates. Pledges receivable and the allowance for uncollectible accounts are examples of significant estimates. Significant audit adjustments. The audit committee should be informed of all significant adjustments made as a result of the audit that may not have been otherwise detected by management or employees. The external auditors must also provide the audit committee with a listing of proposed audit adjustments that were not recorded because neither the external auditors nor management considered the amounts involved to be material to the financial statements, either on an individual basis or in the aggregate. Responsibility for other information in documents containing audited financial statements. The auditors should discuss their level of responsibility for and involvement with information in other documents containing audited financial statements, such as published annual reports. Disagreements with management. The external auditors should discuss any disagreements with management about matters related to accounting principles, financial reporting practices and policies, and auditing matters that could be significant to the financial statement or the external auditor's report. Areas of disagreement might include application of accounting principles, judgments about accounting estimates, the scope of the audit, or the wording of the external auditor's report. Consultation with other accountants. If the external auditors are aware that management has consulted with other external auditors about auditing, accounting, or financial reporting matters, the views of those auditors should be discussed with the audit committee. Major issues discussed with management prior to retention. The external auditors and the audit committee should review any major management issues raised when they were retained. including discussions about accounting principles, financial reporting practices and policies, and auditing standards and procedures. Difficulties encountered in performing the audit. The external auditor should inform the audit committee of serious difficulties in working with management while performing the audit. Such difficulties might include failure to provide necessary information, unreasonable delays, unavailability of client personnel, or failure of client personnel to complete requested schedules promptly. In addition, the audit committee should discuss the following topics with the external auditors: comparison of actual with anticipated audit results, any need to expand audit procedures and the reasons for doing so, changes in report format or note disclosures from the previous year and reasons for making those changes, evaluation of personnel involved in preparing and monitoring financial information, non-audit services and related fees during the prior year, the report that the audit committee chairman will present to the board. During the post-audit period, the audit committee should meet in separate executive sessions with the external auditors, the internal auditors, and management. That's a repeat. Okay. These executive sessions should be a standard part of the post-audit meeting. Again, if an executive session deals with situations involving compliance or whistleblowing, the audit committee may want to have its own legal counsel present. Let's see.
Excuse me, Summer.
Yes.
It's after 7:30, and I had sort of, this is Margie. I apologize.
Oh no, that's okay.
I had sort of thought this meeting would be over by 7:30.
Oh, you know, and I'm fine with stopping it here because I know it's like, you know, I mean, the mind starts to numb after a while. And, you know, what this goes on, and I would recommend that everyone read the rest of the report, the monitoring function of the audit committee, which might fit in with some of what Fred Klunder was talking about, because it has risk and the internal auditors, and then it goes on to things like dealing with fraud and the importance of management's discussion and analysis. So I would recommend that the management letter, the thing that we discussed in closed session. So I would suggest that everyone, for your own edification, if you found this somewhat helpful in giving you an idea of what you're getting into here, to please continue to read the rest of this on your own time, okay? And I'm fine with stopping here if there's no objection with that, okay? Because I know there's only so much everyone can take in at one time anyhow. And so, you know, there's probably another 5 or 10 pages of this particular, you know, overview. And there's several other overviews that I sent to everyone. And I would like to stress, you know, that we used a different auditing firm last year than the year before. The one that we are, you know, currently using for this most recent year is one that we had used in the past for several years in a row, and then we had a different one in between. And the one in between, you know, the price was considerably higher, and I believe because they found it particularly difficult to perform our audit in the circumstances that we have going on at many of our units. And the present auditor was, as I said, selected by the chief financial officer instead of the audit committee, which is not a good practice. And also that it's fairly standard to want to switch out the audit firm that you use like every 2 to 3 years to prevent an unduly cozy relationship arising between the audit firm and management. So you try to keep it fresh by switching out firms at least every 3 years. So, and it's not an aspersion against the current accounting firm in any way, but this is a firm that we have used several years in a row prior to the 1 year that we used somebody else. So that's certainly something that we should be looking at for this upcoming year, is that we as a committee should, like, you know, select bids from maybe, you know, 3 firms at least and see what we get from that to, you know, adhere to best practices on that sort of selection issue. So are there any questions about any of this? Does anyone have any input besides let's end the meeting soon?
Are we going to schedule the next meeting? How does that work?
Yeah, that would be good. What day? We are on, what is this? Is this the third Monday? We've been trying on almost all of the committees at the national level to select a day of the week in a specific week of the month so that it's a recurring time frame, and that way people can kind of keep track of it and not have it just jumping all around the month. So I could jump in,
the first meeting we had, we decided on the third Monday of every month.
That's what I thought. Okay, thank you, Fred Blair.
That would be the notes from that Carolyn took.
Okay, thank you. So what day is that, actually, for next month? Let me pull up the calendar here.
May 16th.
What is
May
it?
May 16th.
May 16th?
May 16th.
16th, okay. All right. Well, then, very good. I guess I'll go ahead and get that noticed. And I'm going to also send everyone out. There's a nonprofit manual from the California Attorney General, which doesn't directly relate to audit committees, but does relate to nonprofits and their appropriate administration. So I'm going to send that to everyone also as a link, and read at your leisure. But the more of this that you absorb, the probably the easier it'll be going forward to get things done. So. Are there any action items or anything that anyone wants me to take or supply to the group?